That's nice. Thank you, Engineer Michael Bowen, for that. It's Buddy Emmons on the Laps, the pedal steel guitar.
Oh, boy.
You like that?
Yeah.
I do like that.
Oh, he was so great. The greatest at the pedal steel of all.
Has he passed now?
He has passed for the last several years. He's been pushing up daisies. Hey, it's the Roundtable Panel, everybody. 9:14 on a Thursday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable Panel, and what a panel we have. We have a journalism professor from St. Rose, Kaylin Brown, is here. Good morning.
Morning, Ray.
Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
You look none the worse for wear after the media project.
And we've just graduated our senior class.
So congratulations.
It's a celebratory time.
So this will be the last time you wake up this early all summer, yeah?
I wish.
Judy Patrick is here, Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Raymond.
And you handled the media project as well.
You know, I'm a little fatigued. It was a rambunctious group.
You hosted.
I did. So
anybody give you a hard time?
Anybody? Yeah. Sunday at 6, Monday at 3.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm sure that you kept Chartok in line.
You know, he doesn't believe he's an insider, and we had to explain to him that he is an insider.
Oh, he's the ultimate insider.
Yes.
We're going to drain the swamp on this program. And speaking of that, Chris Churchill is here from the Times Union. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
What do you mean, speaking of that? Were you thinking he's part of the swamp?
No, he's one of those.
I'm one of the drainers, I think he means.
He's a drainer.
Thank you.
You're the swamp.
Crusading journalist. And then there's Alan. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
You may call me Doctor.
You know, Doctor, this is exciting because we have a promotion going on and the
let me talk about it.
Oh, all right, I'll just shut up.
This is not radio. This is not, you know, your kind of old style AM radio where you say, oh, there's a promotion going on. This is us. This is all of us. This is our community that is at stake here. So I wanted to say something before people hold me too responsible.
All right.
Yesterday, Joe and I went on and we said we had 250 extraordinary tickets to the Boston Symphony Orchestra, which is opening night at Tanglewood. That's when all the swells go.
Yeah.
And there's a prelude at Ozawa Hall, which is a gorgeous place. So you get not only to sit on the lawn and watch the concert, but you can go into Ozawa Hall and watch that also.
A prelude concert at 6 p.m.
At 6 p.m. You are so right. And... And Lang Lang is going to, be the pianist that night. It's going to be terrific. And Mozart, Tchaikovsky.
Well, they're going to be there as well?
They are.
Splendid.
Yeah, and they are.
Those are valuable tickets.
Yeah.
And not only that, there's going to be some Brahms, the horn trio. I love the horn trio. I do. I used to run when I was in my running days. I would run listening to that horn trio. It was terrific. So anyway, if you call now, you can get two of these tickets for opening night. Do you hear me? Opening night at Tanglewood. That is something.
But wait a minute.
No, you wait.
Well, what do you have to do to get those?
Wait a minute. And don't you also donate to WAMC
at
the same time?
That's the point. Thank you, Judy, for keeping
$100
them on message.
Gets you the
ticket. Just a phone call. That's all it takes.
$100 gets you the ticket. But if listen to this. With $150, you not only get the two tickets, but you get the, and this is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Ray's holding it up now. It is a tartan, I think it's the Murray Clan, blanket with the tangle embossed and embalmed.
Are you still videoing? Can
yeah,
people see
Judy,
this
why don't you take this? It's folded up. You can use it as a pillow during the show.
Take a little snooze.
It's
lovely.
It's hefty. It's got
lovely.
Some girth.
Okay, so that's a $150 pledge if you want to add the blanket.
Yes.
Okay, and the reason we're doing all this is...
We want to really keep WAMC going. And it's that simple.
The lockbox is open, right?
The lockbox is open. Boy, are you good.
We want to shorten the fun drive, right, which is coming in June.
That's right, also. That's
correct.
The second right thing you said in a couple of seconds
okay.
here. Okay. So, and now 1-800-323-9262... 1-800-323-9262. Operators, in other words, us, are standing by.
Yes, and you can go online at WAMC.org.
Which is the preferred way at WAMC.org, and just click on the lockbox. So what do you get, Ray? Go over this with me again.
Okay, Alan, and this is, again, a limited time. There are only 250 of these to start. It's a pair of lawn tickets to the opening night of Boston Symphony
Orchestra. No, most of those are gone. Those are gone, flying out the window now.
It's a Tanglewood Friday,
July
6th.
Left.
The grounds open at 5:30. If you get there early, there is a 6 p.m. prelude concert featuring members of the BSO. So you get all that for a $100 pledge to our lockbox, which in fact shortens the fund drive. If you want to tack on another 50 and make it a $150 pledge, we'll give you this
tartan.
It's a blanket.
It's a fleece blanket. Folds up. It's got some Velcro, so it's pretty.
Case.
It's very very portable.
And you can put it down on the lawn. You can lie on it.
Nice. Put it over your lap. Right, put it over your shoulders.
Right. So, you know, there will be those that complain. And I must say, they'll say, why are you talking about this? I'm going to turn the radio off. Here's the thing. And a lot of people have been with us for a long time.
Right.
And they remember that fund drives go 7-10 days. Some people are new and they don't realize.
They don't remember 2 weeks.
Exactly.
People holding on to each other in the halls.
So if we spend 5-10 minutes talking about this leading up to the fund drive, we're doing 1-day drives, 2-day drives, and then we're back to regular programming. This really helps.
You know how many letters we got yesterday about it?
How many?
People objecting? One.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did mine get through? Okay, let's get down to business here. It's the roundtable panel, and again, joining us today, Kaylin Brown and Judy Patrick and Chris Churchill, as well as Alan Shartok. You can join in as well by sending an email, and don't complain about the lockbox promotion. Just tell us what you want to say about politics and whatnot. It's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Try to keep them brief, to the point, avoid abbreviations and links, etc. President Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, urging special counsel Robert Mueller to wrap it up on the eve of the probe's one-year anniversary. Giuliani told Laura Ingraham on Fox News last night, Mueller has all the facts to make a decision after 12 months of investigating Russian meddling in the election and possible collusion with the Trump campaign. And I quote, Mueller should now bring this to a close, said Giuliani. It's been a year. He's gotten 1.4 million documents. He's interviewed 28 witnesses. He has nothing, which is why he wants to bring the president into an interview.
But the best thing he said, was when he started to talk about, he said, so he can't indict. He's already said, Mueller says, I'm not going to indict. Because you have to impeach before you indict, which is something I think is ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous. But he's not going to do it. Perhaps Mueller saved his job that way. I don't know. All I know is he said all he can do, and this is my favorite thing, is write a report. All he can do is write a report.
Who wants first?
You know, Chris. Oh, no, Judy.
Go ahead, Chris.
Judy.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, one of my questions is, so this is what Giuliani is saying. This isn't, we're not hearing this from the mouth of Mueller, right? So
correct.
This is what Giuliani, the other point I always had, so you can't indict a sitting president according to the Justice Department. But if that is the case, why did Ford pardon Nixon? Why was there a need to pardon Nixon?
Well, I think that the problem was that Nixon was not going to be the president anymore. Right?
So you can indict him after he leaves office for crimes committed inside the office.
Sure.
I think it is an open legal question, right? I mean, until the Supreme Court answers it one way or the other. I mean,
right. There has been no legal challenge, to my knowledge, going back to Nixon and then Clinton.
So who is above the law? As I have said in an earlier commentary today, you mean to say if a president kills his wife on Fifth Avenue, I'm taking it to the absurd, with a gun, you can't indict him? He's above the law? The whole symbolism is that there is somebody in this country who is above the law? Doesn't make any sense to me.
But is he above the law if he gets indicted after he's taken out of office, though? I mean, I think the point might be that there's supposed to be kind of a checks and balances, and then you don't want, you know, you don't want the president taken out for political reasons by law enforcement. I'm not saying that anybody should be above the law, but I'm just saying that, I mean, there is some thinking behind it. It's not just this protect the president at all costs kind of thing.
Self-protective garbage, that's what's behind it. You know, these guys pass rules which protect them. It's ridiculous. Think, Chris, I mean, I have great respect for you, of course.
Uh-oh, here it comes.
I'm leaving. I'm out.
But think, now the knife.
No, but I've already said it, so why say it again? Take it to its absurdity. You say, okay, we should wait after that president shoots his wife on Fifth Avenue. We should wait and impeach him first and then indict him? Nonsense.
Well, it would be easy to change a policy, right? If the Justice Department has a policy that prohibits the indictments, the Justice Department could change its policy and enable indictments, or legislators who make laws could change laws that would enable indictments, yes?
Yeah, well, this legislature run by the Republicans in both houses are going to change any law?
But perhaps the Justice Department may.
The Justice Department under the thumb of a president who fires a guy from the FBI and who says you're not a loyalist? That Justice Department?
Yes, that's the one.
You know, part of the logic of saying that they weren't going to indict him was then there would be no rationale for subpoenaing him or requiring his testimony, because if they're not considering an indictment, then there's no need to interview him. I think that was one of the points Giuliani was making.
It's actually kind of interesting that Giuliani brought that up in the first place. I mean, it almost makes it sound as though an indictment is a possibility, like there's some sort of damning evidence that would lead the Trump administration to worry about that, right? I mean, if they thought there was no chance of him ever being indicted, why is Giuliani bringing this up?
I love the line. I'll repeat it one more time. All he can do is write a report,
yeah,
which means, shoo, just another stinking report to put on the shelf.
Well, so far, 19 people have been charged in this investigation, including, Michael Flynn and Rick Gates.
And a gaggle of Russians.
Giuliani
can never be brought to the court of law.
But Giuliani's point that this has now gone on for a year, is there any validity to that? Enough's enough.
What do you mean, enough's enough? You go where the evidence takes you. This is a very important thing every day. I tell you, I'm addicted to watching cable TV. I watched this morning, and all this new stuff is out there about what happened in the Trump meeting, what happened on the plane. This is stuff that needs to be uncovered. And we don't know who's flipping yet, do we? We don't know, for example, whether Mr. Cohn is going to flip and whether there's a whole bunch of new material that's going to be coming out. You take it till it's over.
I do think there's a point to be made, though, that the investigation shouldn't be endless. I mean, you know, let's see what you got.
That's why you are such a great columnist.
Because no, I'm willing to make stupid opinion.
Well, I think it is valuable that we learn sooner than later what Mueller does have. I agree with you, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't people like to know this before the next presidential election, perhaps? You know,
You'll know before the next presidential election. Let's remember, what is it? We're coming up on the second year of this administration.
Right, the end of the second year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it must be disappointing to the administration, because if you remember back in December, they thought this thing was going to get wrapped up before the end of December, and now we're headed into the summer of 2018.
Well, a political cynic might say that this was all designed to continue into midterms.
Well, we don't know any cynics, so we don't have to.
No, exactly. No.
Well, there may be a reason that Giuliani's been put forward, right, and is saying the things he's been saying. We can either think that he's a loose cannon, or we can think that this is very carefully orchestrated on the White House's part with an end game yet to be decided.
I think what Giuliani is doing makes sense from the administration's point of view. I mean, he's putting pressure on them to get, you know, he's if he keeps repeating this point, I think pressure will grow for Mueller to show us something, you know, to release something.
And we'll start to hear how much the Mueller investigation has cost and how many people have been employed and how many resources have been spent. And it's not, I'm sure it's in the millions of dollars. It's not a small amount
of
money.
Has been.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org if you want to weigh in. panel@wamc.org. And I just realized that Sarah LaDuke not here today. And I don't know.
Patrick.
I don't know if Patrick's down here.
Patrick is down here.
I'm not sure.
Patrick,
I might have to go get the emails in the other room.
Patrick will bring you the letters.
Does that mean you're going to leave us with Alan?
I've been considering it, actually. I've been considering it. Now, don't forget, before we take our first break here, about the lockbox, and we don't want to belabor the point, but the lockbox is open at WAMC.org.
And we can't live without you.
And we have a great promotion thanks to our friends at Tanglewood and the BSO.
I hate that word promotion. It sounds so, you know, AM radio-ish. I would condemn you for using that word.
You know, AM radio was a great medium, or is a great medium for many people.
Ah, splendid. And
magic.
I like AM radio as well.
And there's an AM in WAMC, so what about it?
I don't like AM radio. And by the way,
we're on AM radio, aren't we? I mean, there you have AM transmitter.
We do. But we're doing so.
He makes a point.
Public radio is doing
columnist.
So much better than all of that garbage on AM radio.
All right.
Radio.
Yeah. Why don't you read one letter and we'll take a break.
I'll read one letter, okay? Right. Just one.
All right.
Because that's all we have.
Okay. Well, that's all we were given.
Yeah, right. Okay. So from Gary. Benghazi investigation, 4 years, no indictments. Hillary email investigation, 2 years, no indictments. Mueller investigation, 1 year, 22 indictments. And that's from Gary in Oneonta. Good for you, Gary.
Thank you for listening in Oneonta, Gary. We'll take a break here. It's the Roundtable Panel. Judy Patrick, Kaylin Brown, Chris Churchill, Alan Chartok, and you at panel@wamc.org. We'll be back after news. It's kind of like music from the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah.
Mr. Hathaway, Jethro wants to be a rock star.
He talked to the guy who leaked the information about the Cohen.
Oh, we're on, you know. That's okay. It's fine. Judy Patrick here, Cinema Verite, and also Kaylin Brown and Chris Churchill, as well as Alan Chartok, and yours truly, Ray Graff, and for Joe Donahue today. It's the Roundtable Panel, very relaxed today on the program. You can weigh in if you'd like by emailing us, panel@wamc.org, and weighing in at 37 pounds. Here's Alan Chartok.
Okay, here is a letter. It's not... Come on now, that's not fair.
What?
I'm not 37 pounds. I'm 127 pounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Okay. Indictment. What are you guys talking about? There's no crime anyway. Investigation in search of a crime. Keep bringing up the meaningless 19 indictments. This is a political hit job from the inception. You never talk about all the evidence of that. Never. And that's from Tom, one of our regular correspondents. And then, did anybody want to check in on that?
I'm waiting for the facts. I don't know whether there was a crime or not.
Well, just to say that I believe it is Senator Blumenthal, who has said that he thinks indictment is possible. So,
yeah,
well, from Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So that is of interest.
Mm-hmm. Dexter says, I thought impeachment was simply an indictment by Congress. So on the question of whether justice can indictment, isn't it a constitutional question? No. Impeachment is a political process. You can impeach for anything. You can impeach for behavior in office. You can impeach if somebody committed a crime. As long as you have the votes in the House of Representatives and a conviction in the Senate, because it takes the Senate to convict. That's what it is. People confuse this all the time. One does not get indicted in an impeachment procedure. People make the parallel connection that an indictment is a charge, and it's also a charge when you impeach. But that's what it is. It is not a criminal indictment. Okay, thank you for that, Dexter. And hope we cleared that up. And then Julie says, the way I see it, this approach is not to not indict the president is a slow squeeze to get Trump to resign. So then they could indict. In the meantime, there's a karmic election pressure on the GOPs who supported Trump and the election meddling of Russia, Cambridge Analytica et al. Chris, how did you react to this idea of the getting Trump to resign?
I think you could argue that the reverse, that the fact that he might get indicted if he resigns would be a reason he wouldn't resign, right? I mean, if you're safe when you stay in office, then stay in office.
What do you think, Jude?
I agree. I don't foresee him resigning no matter what.
I don't really foresee him being indicted either. I mean, either in office or after, but that's...
Well, doesn't a lot have to do with what he thinks about his lies? Now, the Washington Post says over 3,000 lies. They keep adding them all up. If he's the kind of individual who says a lie, and as soon as it passes his mouth, he internalizes it and believes it to be true, then why would he resign? You wouldn't resign if you actually believe that it's so. You would resign if you think they got you.
Or you might resign if you thought Congress was going to impeach you, too, right? Like Nixon.
Right, or if you make a deal.
Right.
And the deal is, let me go and...
You pardon. Pence pardons him.
And that's a big thing that's happening right now. The press is making a big deal out of whether or not Pence is reconnoitering here in such a way that Trump goes down and he will be ready to pick up the pieces.
You know, based on what evidence, though? I mean, a lot, so much speculation. Where's the evidence for that?
Darned if I know.
Anybody?
I just know what I read in the papers.
Well, I mean, isn't the vice president kind of supposed to be? Isn't that the role, just to sit there and be ready to take over if something happens to the guy in charge? I mean, I don't. Right. That's kind of what you're supposed to do.
And you know what, Chris?
I mean, if he's scheming, you know, and to get him out of office, that might be a different story. But I don't
know. That'd be a good story, though. That'd be a great be a good story.
When you got something.
When I was growing up, vice presidents just went to funerals and really were kind of out of the loop. And then came Dick Cheney, and things changed.
Well, you know, I'm so old that I remember a lot of this stuff, but Dick Nixon was the political operative for Eisenhower. And he was really running the political end of the presidency. So there's a history of, and that's what they're accusing Pence of doing now, doing all the operational stuff, you know, for on the politics of the situation, as we say. Mm. So, yeah, that's what they do. You're right, Chris. That's what vice presidents do.
Well, there was a report, I think, this week that said that Pence has been interacting more with the National Republican Committee and trying to make ties, and that his operatives are making ties with the Republican National
That's
Committee.
That's the one they're talking about, right?
Right. So it makes sense that he would be doing that, because he's probably trying to prepare for whatever might come.
I mean, you think they would have done that quite some time ago.
Indeed.
Well,
indeed.
Let's put ourselves into his place, into Pence's place. If you were the vice president and you were politically ambitious, would you not be feathering your own nest?
We don't even know if Trump's going to run again. Maybe Pence doesn't believe that he will. Maybe Pence is preparing for 2020 and he, you know, wants to set himself up as a front runner.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. I don't know.
Possible.
Alan just shot a glare at Chris for some
reason. It wasn't a glare.
No?
It was a look of great respect.
You know, I just can't see a world in which Trump doesn't run for re-election. I think this is his dream job.
Hasn't he already declared?
Yes, he has.
Yeah, but
not really. Yeah. I mean, he says things all the time that
right.
Don't
what
come
does that
true.
Mean? What
you
does
notice
that, mean?
That?
There's no meaning there.
Okay, I got beaten up by Jeffrey, who said, "For your information, your AM radio station at 1400 AM is very." You raised this very question, Chris, didn't you? Mm-hmm. The FM signal can't penetrate into my Albany parking garage, but I get the AM signal just fine.
You see,
the AM station allows me to listen to WMC for those precious extra minutes on each side of my commute. Nice.
Thank you for listening in the parking garage. That's awesome.
Indeed.
God bless AM radio.
If we can get long wave, then the submarines can hear us. It'll be nice. And the whales.
And Stephen says, any medium that gave me Marvin Gaye, Hank Williams, and the Rolling Stones cannot be deemed garbage, Stephen.
I love music on AM
Steve.
Radio,
right.
By the way.
I think it's all changed now. Those were the good days.
Absolutely.
I love the sound of AM radio.
Those were the
love
good
it.
Old days. Did I say
late
something provocative or what?
Still a lot of baseball on AM radio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's true. If you're really, but you have to be careful because you don't want to fall asleep driving a car.
Not a baseball fan, are you?
Well,
I think that's pretty obvious.
Let's go,
oh,
Mets.
You're missing out.
Okay. And AM radio, another one. See, you never know on this show. You could say something in passing, and then the next 400 letters will be about that. Okay, so this one is from Richard, okay, who said, AM radio serves very valuable function. All news radio offers alternative to NPR, helps to balance the news. And by the way, Ray, you're a real expert on this, because it just occurred to me, you know, when I leave the house in the morning,
yeah,
if the BBC is, as you say, the British news,
the
is
BBC.
Not satisfactory,
yeah,
sometimes I go down to 880, which is
CBS
WCBS
in New York,
in New York,
yeah,
and you can barely get it. But now they have an app, right? You could listen to 880, couldn't you?
So you're promoting WCVS app?
But you could.
Really?
They have a wonderful app. It really is terrific.
WAMC has an app as well. Just
There's
saying.
Not enough competition.
You know, it's like Macy's and Gimbel's. You really are a big-hearted man. Let's take
Speaking
a break.
Of big,
big. 2,500 pages of interview transcripts released yesterday with Little Donnie. And we'll take a break and we'll get back to it on the roundtable.
Well,
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC 945 on your Thursday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel, and we have Alan Chartok here, Chris Churchill, Kaylin Brown, and Judy Patrick. And you can join in as well. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. Questioned intently by a Senate committee, President Trump's son stuck firmly to his story. He was unapologetic. He deflected many questions, said he didn't think there was anything wrong with meeting a Russian lawyer at Trump Tower in hopes of election season dirt on Hillary Clinton, according to transcripts released Wednesday. Donald Trump Jr., speaking in a closed-door interview last year with the Senate Judiciary Committee, said he didn't give much thought to the idea that the June 9, 2016 meeting was part of a Russian government effort to help his father in the presidential race. Quote, I don't know that it alarmed me, but like I said, I don't know, and I don't know that I was all that focused on it at the time, Trump Jr. said in response to a question about whether he was troubled by the prospect of Russian support. The committee on Wednesday released about 2,500 pages of interview transcripts and other documents tied to the New York meeting, which Trump Jr. attended with the expectation of receiving compromising info about his father's Democratic opponent.
It's a terrific story.
And then he made a phone call after that meeting, which went to a blocked number. Exactly right. And that's what's interesting. He can't remember that, which I don't know. I don't remember everything either.
It was 11 minutes.
But yes, it was a lengthy phone call. And then there was a subsequent 3-minute phone call after that, I believe, to the same blocked number. So the president at his home has a blocked number. And
but a lot of other people have blocked
numbers.
Many people have blocked numbers, but it was
what exactly is a blocked
put
number?
Put forth that you can't. It's when your doctor, when you need your doctor needs to call you back, and they make sure that you that their number is blocked so that you can't call their home in case right at midnight you have an emergency. You know about blocked numbers.
Yeah.
So you can't see what the number is. You don't know who was called.
But of course, it's been pointed out by the FBI guys and everybody else, if the government needs to know who that call was made to, they can. They can subpoena the record. The phone company always knows what every call was, right?
Right. Which
I hope
is
so.
Probably why Donald Trump Jr. said, I don't recall, rather right. than it wasn't my father or something along those lines, right?
Right.
'Cause just don't get caught lying and you're okay.
But the media apparently confirmed previous reports that it was kind of a bust because they didn't come with any real dirt on Hillary Clinton as promised. But did underscore the fact that Don Jr. really wanted this dirt from the Russians if he could get it. It seems like he was trying to ingratiate himself with his father, that, you know, the fact that he could really do something positive for this campaign by bringing this dirt to him.
Now, one of the interesting things that comes out of the question you have so adroitly raised with us, Raymond, is the idea of the difference between the two committees, the investigation committee under Nunes in the House, and this very bipartisan and critical report being released with the analysis that, yes, we do believe that the Russians were trying to influence our election. And now, for the first time, really, we're seeing a whole bunch of very honorable Republicans saying, hey, we got to go where the evidence leads us, as opposed to just doing the Nunes thing and going up to the White House with material to help the president.
And what the Russians wanted out of that meeting was some movement on the Magnitsky Act. They wanted the sanctions to be released. So they had a purpose themselves, which was at odds with what Trump Jr.'s purpose was.
Right. And you'll remind everybody about what the Magnitsky Act was.
Well, the United States required sanctions against Russia. Because, help me.
But it all deals with whether or not it's easy to adopt Russian children as well, correct?
I'm sorry? I better put my earphones on here because...
Well, there is a question about the... There was a question around the Magnitsky Act about the Russian government prohibited United States families from adopting Russian children at some point.
Were you going to say something, Chris?
I was going to... This will be an unpopular opinion, but couldn't you argue... Couldn't you argue that I mean, I was looking up on my phone when this meeting occurred precisely, but you could make a case that meeting is kind of evidence that collusion wasn't happening.
How do you figure?
Because if they're colluding, if the two campaigns are already in, or the Russian government and the Trump campaign is already in contact, why are they having this kind of silly meeting?
Wait. The Russian lady who put this all together came and said, "I have something for you, and you're going to be very interested in it." And the question is whether or not that something was anti-Hillary material that they had collected. I don't think you can arrive at the conclusion you have so well done here, Chris, without knowing that they walked into that room thinking they were going to get something.
Right. What I'm saying is, if they were already colluding, they don't need to walk into that room to get something. They're already colluding.
Well, you're assuming they're already colluding and they're doing it effectively. This was supposed to be a small meeting, and they were going to dish the dirt on Hillary, and that's what this was supposed to be all about. When they found out it was not going to be productive, they got up and they walked out, Trump Jr. and the others.
Right, but isn't that evidence that they weren't, to that point, colluding? Because if they're colluding, they don't need to be in this silly, stupid meeting that none of them should have gone to. It's certainly possible that they started colluding after, because the meeting was in June.
Right, June of 2016.
But it suggests that at that point, they weren't yet colluding.
I say they were colluding, and that the whole idea of this meeting was to further collusion.
Well, for his part, Trump Jr. was fairly unapologetic. He said, quote, at one point, "I didn't think that listening to someone with information relevant to the fitness and character of a presidential candidate would be an issue."
And Rudy, by the way, let the cat out of the bag yesterday and this morning by saying, of course people deal with Russians and Germans and everybody else all the time. That's what we do. We don't have to do anything with it. But you have a president who denied that he did. Right. And then these guys who are liars, of course, made it plain that this meeting was supposed to be about something else, about adoption. What a bunch of malarkey.
Well, it is important to know that Trump Jr. was misleading in his answers about this in the first place. So why are you lying if you didn't do anything wrong?
Well said. Okay. "Hi, all. Why does everyone believe the Russians had no real info on Hillary? I know the Trump camp kept saying that, but repeating a lie does not make it true. Warm regards from Kevin and Sandy."
Hi, Kevin and Sandy. Thank you.
Well, there was no information handed out at that particular meeting, these people they were meeting with in June had that information, I think.
If the Russians had given something damaging to the Trump campaign during that meeting, wouldn't that damaging information have come out during the course of the campaign? I mean, as far as I'm aware, we never saw anything that you could say
was right. But Chris, the reason they got up and walked out was because they weren't getting what they had been promised, they thought.
Right, but I think your letter writer is saying, well, how do we know that's true, that they weren't getting what they were promised?
Yeah,
right.
That's a good point. Yeah. Janet says, "Dear panel, Justice Department rules can be changed. The president can be indicted on state charges like murder." Yeah, if you break a law in New York State, and that was one of the things that people were saying about, what was his name? Schneiderman. They were saying Schneiderman was keeping a dual operation going with the feds so that if Mueller got fired, Schneiderman could, you know, do his thing. So one more reason that this is...
His thing being to pursue allegations against the administration.
Yes. Yep. Okay. And Larry says, Trump's Republicans, I never thought I'd say this, but I miss the old Republicans, the ones with a backbone and some sense of morality. Today's Republican Party is corrupt, morally bankrupt, and hopefully will be held accountable for conspiring with Trump in covering up any wrongdoings. Wait. But wait, what did I just tell you that the Republicans on the Senate committee did? They joined and they said, yes, there was a Republican collusion. There was the attempt by the Russians to influence the elections. Those were Republicans on that Senate committee as well as Democrats.
Well, there's research on social media sites that show that the Russians were deploying bots, et cetera.
No, we know that. Right. We know that, but I'm just simply saying in reaction to this letter.
Wait a minute. Okay.
Well, Mueller's a Republican, too. You know, I mean, the Republicans all over the
place. And Comey was a Republican. Right. Rosenstein is a Republican. Come on.
The Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday said it stands by the assessment from 2017 that U.S. intelligence agencies made that Russia intervened to try to hurt Clinton and help Trump. I don't believe the Senate Intelligence Committee said we believe that the Trump campaign colluded.
Sounds like this. Oh, I see your point. Yeah, you may. I may have overreached there.
I think you might
there's
have
a distinction,
a bit.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point for once. Keith says, panel, I am pro lockbox if it keeps the fund drive to a minimum, and I am pro witch hunts if they indict 22 witches. 5 witch guilty pleas, 1 witch currently serving time in prison. Call the Mueller investigation whatever you want, but it has found illegality. We are supposedly a nation of laws. Anyone else getting a cake to celebrate the 1-year anniversary of the Mueller investigation? That's from Keith.
I know. Are we getting a cake? I'm all for cake.
I'll pay for it if you get
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll celebrate when justice has been meted.
Okay, so you're on a diet then.
I am.
It may be a while.
I am. It might be a while.
All right. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. If you have something you would like to say to us, keep it brief if you could. To the point, no links, et cetera, et cetera. South Korea said Thursday it's pushing to reset high-level talks with North Korea and will communicate closely with Washington and Pyongyang to increase the chances of successful summit between Trump and Jong-un. And we'll see what happens there. There was some kind of stepping back from the summit yesterday by North Korea.
Who's first?
Does this mean that North Korea is a little bit erratic?
You think?
And is that anything new, right, Chris?
Yeah, exactly. we should have expected that there would be a little bit of, craziness.
Right.
Yeah.
The key here is China. The key here is China. Now, you can be sure we have backdoor channels going with China right now, and that there's an issue of, is this for real? Isn't this for real? China needs stability. They're doing extremely well in this world. They are doing so well that the last thing they need is this kerfuffle with North Korea. And I am sure of it, that China has said to the Trump people, don't worry about it. It'll be okay. And immediately they said, by the way, these meetings should go on.
Well, the Trump administration says it has not been notified about a threat for North Korea to cancel. And all of this comes amid some posturing. Now, the South Koreans and the U.S. are doing maneuvers, which in March, Jong-un said, by the way, you know, I know you're going to do this in March, and I'm okay with it. Try to scale it back if you can. Now we get this. So some people say this is just him getting some leverage going into the June 6th. Is it 16th that they're meeting? June 16th, I think?
It's soon, but another
June 12th.
Okay. And another precipitator, I think, was when – let's see, one of the administration's Twitter accounts, I think, said that the goal for North Korea and United States meeting was to completely disarm North Korea. And North Korea objects to that complete disarmament. They want a conversation about arms control, which also there is a distinction. So that's the latest thing I read.
You know that Trump's going to keep putting things on the table. His whole philosophy of the art of the deal is to keep raising things and make them go back. And I'm sure they're doing the same thing. I mean, I think there's a reasonable expectation. I hope I don't get arrested for being a traitor here. a reasonable expectation that if you're going in and you're putting your cards on the table and they're releasing 3 Americans who were there, that you scale back on these joint exercises, war exercises with South Korea. Makes sense to me. We know that Kim is pulling back on the what he's got going in terms of nuclear. There's talk of doing away with some of the plants and all the rest of it. It's the wrong direction.
Well, let's pick this up on the other side of the news. Former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson took a shot at foreign policy of the Trump administration. It's panel@wamc.org. If you want to send us a quick email, panel@wamc.org. We have Chris Churchill. We have Kaylin Brown, Judy Patrick, Alan Chartok, and you on the panel. We'll be back after news. Yeah, Buddy Emmons, lap steel. Beautiful, right? Actually, a pedal steel.
Nothing like it.
The roundtable is the program. It's the roundtable panel. We have Judy Patrick. We have Chris Churchill. We have Kalen Brown. We have Alan Shartok. And we have you at panel@wamc.org. We'll get to some emails in a moment. But first, some important business.
I do want to thank everybody who's been calling in and putting money into the lockbox, because that's how we live. Can't have a radio station. The lockbox is a great way of doing it because, as you know, we may lose a few seconds here or there, but in the end, we have you, and we have always depended on you. And the day we don't, it's over. There are 500,000 individual people who listen to WAMC, according to our stats, every month. 500,000. And if everybody just did a little, we would be in great shape. And it's just a matter of personal responsibility. We thank everybody who's done something, but we need you now. Now, these tickets are going fast. And we want your help. Now, what is it? It's a pair of lawn tickets to opening night at the Boston Symphony, Friday, July 6, 2018 at 8 p.m. The grounds open at 5:30. There is a pre-concert at Koussevitzky with members of
Ozawa,
yes. And the sponsor, of course, is our wonderful friends at Tanglewood, who have given us these tickets. There were 250 of them. There are far fewer now. It's for opening night at Tanglewood with Lang Lang, the pianist, at the Koussevitzky Music Shed in Lenox, Massachusetts. And they're going to be playing great stuff. Lots of Mozart, Tchaikovsky, Brahms. It couldn't get better than that. And that's when all of the swells and everybody gets up and goes to Tanglewood for that opening night. It is an impressive time. You get these two lawn tickets, and if you want to add another $50, you get the wonderful WAMC blanket.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, a $100 pledge, you'll get a pair of lawn tickets to opening night,
yes,
at Tanglewood, yes, Boston Symphony Orchestra, July 6th.
Check.
And then if you pledge another $50 or more,
check,
you get a WAMC blanket. It says Northeast Public Radio. And
it folds up into a nice little package.
Sure.
You know, it's bigger than you think, too. It's 3 by 5.5. So if you really do want to sit on it, you can.
Yeah, I really didn't think.
You can actually lie on it.
Right. Correct.
You could be like the president.
And the base is a woven water and resistant material, so you're not going to get the.
I mean, is it washable if anything happens to your lying down?
It's washable. It folds into a handy carrying case.
And the one thing we haven't said is how you do it.
Oh, my gosh. How do you do it?
You got 1-800-323-9262. Write it down. 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org, which is a good way of doing it, and just say, mark me down, brother, where do I sign?
And then everything we raise now in the lockbox will count on day one of the on-air drive, which is, I believe, June 4th. Is that a Monday?
4th or 5th.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And then, you know, we can do a one-day drive. We've been doing
them. A day and a couple of hours.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
So if you can't stand...
Don't give up, folks. Don't give up.
Right. If you can't stand the chit-chat about the lockbox, just remember, we'll be taking days off the on-air fun drive.
Like sometimes 10 days off.
Right. So there's that. The website is WAMC.org. You can also call us. We have people in the front office ready to take your call. 800...
They're standing by.
323-9262.
1-800-323-9262. Ray and I have the same problem. We do know, he and I, what the number to the station is, 1-800-323-9262. But we also host Vox Pop.
Right.
And that's a whole different number, which we're not going to give.
And then later on midday, I'll be promoting the listener comment line, which is another number. So there are a lot of numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson took a somewhat veiled shot at President Trump on Wednesday, warning that a growing national crisis of ethics and integrity has put American democracy at risk. In remarks to graduates of the Virginia Military Institute, Tillerson lamented assaults on facts that he said would lead to a loss of freedom if not countered. And he said that only societies able to pursue the truth and challenge alternate realities can be truly free.
Was he talking about Eric Schneiderman, or is he talking about the president? Who knows? He's going to be talking about a lot of politicians, but...
Well, you know very well who he was talking about. He was talking about the man he once called a moron.
The man who fired him by tweet.
Yes, and got into terrible trouble for it. And he's right. You know, when the captains of capitalism step up and say, this is a really dangerous situation, to me, that is a demarcation because you go back in history when people could have made a difference and didn't. Here's a guy, I don't have a lot of respect for what he did at the State Department, or firing all the people, or behaving the way that he did, or getting, decimating the State Department. But this is the right thing for him to be doing at this time. Good for him.
Go ahead.
Well, contextually, I was just going to say that Tillerson made these comments at the Virginia Military Institute's graduation, which is important because he was trying to give a message to these graduates about how to live their lives when they go out in the world, and that integrity matters and truth matters. I'd also like to think that it's a stamp in favor of good journalism.
I would like these, instead of a veiled shot, it would be nice if one of these guys would come out and just take an actual shot. You know, why are we always left interpreting, did they mean this, did they mean that? Say what you think if you really have something to say.
I don't think it was very veiled, Chris.
Well, he didn't use his name.
He did not use his name, but he certainly laid it all out. And if you were watching the cables and you were watching the news, it was quite clear it was being attributed as a anti-Trump.
And if you weren't watching, here's a direct quote. From Tillerson, when we as people, the free people, go wobbly on the truth, even on what may seem to be the most trivial of matters, we go wobbly on America, Tillerson said. If we do not, as Americans, confront the crisis of ethics and integrity in our society among our leaders in both public and private sector, and regrettably, at times, in the nonprofit sector, then American democracy as we know it is entering its twilight years.
You know, I'm curious about the timing, though. So where was he when he was in office? I understand the need to be loyal if you're the Secretary of State, loyal to the president. But he didn't speak up while he was there.
They called him a moron.
And if he, not in public. Though. Yeah.
No. And well, it got out.
What steps did he
never
take
denied it.
When he was in power to do anything about this? I don't think he did anything. It was only after he got ousted, and in several months after he got ousted, that he's finally talking. Is he writing a book? Is he writing a column? I haven't seen that yet.
Would you rather he didn't say anything?
No, I want him to, I want people to speak up. I want them to leak. I want them to come forward publicly. I want them, if they see something, I want them to say something.
Mm.
But I think he's right about the crisis of ethics. I mean, that quote that you just read, he was talking about more than just the president. I think he was talking about the entire society.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fair comment for sure.
The interesting reference to nonprofits, I don't know what he was talking about.
Yeah, very interesting.
What did he say
public,
there?
He said, if we do not, as Americans, confront the crisis of ethics and integrity in our society among our leaders in both public and private sector, and regrettably at times in the nonprofit sector, then American democracy as we know it is entering its twilight years.
Hmm. Well, he certainly is a profiteer himself. A shot like that at the not-for-profit sector, is not entirely untypical of these captains of capitalism.
It's a pretty broad statement, though, getting back to Chris's point.
I'm in favor of him not having named the president because I think it aligns him more with his message, which is let's be more civil. And I think the name calling that occurs from the top down is indicative of the failing civility of our nation.
Well, isn't there a time, Galen, that you don't want to be civil? I mean, you know, there's a lot of calls for civility with Trump. But I think he's left the Republicans such danger right now that there are times you really have to call him out and you have to do it dramatically.
I think it was pretty dramatic that Tillerson brought up the fact that there needs to be a more truth-telling, and it was clear to everyone. The reason people know who Rex Tillerson is because of his former position in the administration. So I don't think there's a need for him to call out the president specifically.
Okay.
He has. I think he did call out the president just without saying it.
Yeah.
But I bet the president will point to it and say, well, you know, he didn't name me by name. Maybe he wasn't talking about me. Just the way.
Like in Driver Ed, always leave it out.
See the big picture.
That's right.
So we heard from David, who said, Korea talks. Isn't it reasonable for Kim to pull back from the talks after Bolton invoked the Libyan model for nuclear disarmament? That's a point.
That's a good point.
I mean, we know what happened to Gaddafi as they pulled him out of the hole or wherever he was hiding. And, you know, that was the end of that.
But the word reasonable in the same sentence with Kim is problematic, yes?
Reasonable and saying, blah, 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 blah. I don't get
it. Since when has Kim been reasonable? In what moment have we ever seen reason out of North Korea?
You make a point.
Okay.
Okay. All right. And then Linda says, good morning, panel. Does anyone think Rex Tillerson would be a viable presidential candidate? Thank you. Well, he's got the money. He could do it. He would have to run in a primary against Trump, and he would surely lose, because if you take a look at the Republican numbers in the polls, they are still solidly behind this president.
He's about as charming as a bag of sand, though. He doesn't have any charisma whatsoever, as far as I can tell, so I can't imagine him getting very far.
You make a point.
Charming as a bag of sand. Well done.
Okay, and David says, hello to WMC panel. The FM signal has one advantage, no static. It's a clear signal. The AM signal reaches further. However, it also depends on the power of the transmitter. I've been listening to the roundtable for a couple of years on your stream at WMC.org. It would be nice if you can obtain one or two of the old New Jersey public radio frequencies, which are used by WNYC, Northern New Jersey, and HYY, Southern New Jersey. Please have a radio presence in Northern New Jersey.
Don't give him any ideas.
We get letters from Sussex all the time.
Yeah, they listen on our Milford transmitter.
Yeah, they do.
And
that's from David from Fairlawn. New Jersey. Let me just say, David, I think that's a splendid idea.
Oh, come on.
Would you please?
Why stop there? Keep going. Go all the way down to Florida.
The fun drive is going to last forever.
hey, David, would you just send a note to Laura Walker at NYC in New York and say, hey, come on. This would be right.
Give up the frequency.
Give up a couple of frequencies and send them over to WMC. How about that?
This is disturbing on a lot of levels.
This is going to be a national network. I can see it.
Bill says, North Korean leader name. It is Kim, as Korean surnames appear first,
I think. True. Yeah, we were calling him by his first name.
Not we, you.
Jung-un.
Yeah, okay.
And so, Donnie and Jung-un are going to have a meeting.
Funny. Okay, and then Russian collusion from Chris. Is it possible that the Russians set up the meeting with Trump Jr. with a promise of Hillary dirt as another way to spread fake news? They have no news, but now they have a meeting with Trump team showing up? That's from Chris. And Fred says, okay, Rachel Maddow presented the origin story for this whole investigation last evening. There were agents already involved, predating any of what we know now or don't for fact, watching Gates and Papadopoulos.
Yeah, I think we know. I think there was a story in the New York Times today saying basically the same thing and questioning why Comey was so public with the investigation, the FBI's investigation into Hillary, but was relatively or entirely quiet about the investigation into Trump.
Now that you've mentioned the C name, Comey, mm-hmm. I would say to you, there are those people who will think he's a great American hero. But I don't think there's any question that he helped defeat Hillary Clinton in this election by inexplicably coming out a few days before and saying, oh, by the way, there's more to this story and we're reopening the investigation or whatever he said. That was something that will go down, as we used to say in high school, on his permanent record.
I think you're right about that. I think, though, that I mean, any one of us who was faced with the decisions that he was faced with would struggle with them, right? I mean, I can understand why he would be unsure what to do. And I also think that the entire time, if you read the accounts, he assumed Hillary was going to win. I don't think he thought anything he could do would keep her from winning the election, and therefore wanted to go, didn't want it to seem as though the FBI was helping her any more than it.
Yes and no, Chris, because on the other hand,
I'm saying is I don't think he intentionally threw the election to Trump. I think he has always assumed that Hillary was going to win.
As did everybody else.
Right.
You know what we say around here, assume nothing, number one. He shouldn't have assumed that. And number two, there was all kinds of stuff he could have been saying about Trump at that point of the game, and he didn't do it.
Because silence indicates complicity. I think the reason that Hillary Clinton didn't win is because men did not vote for her.
But women didn't vote for her, too. Trump win a majority of white women?
I hear you.
Yeah, well, keep hearing, because I can tell you one thing. You're wrong.
What?
She's wrong.
She said, about what?
She said men didn't vote for Hillary. I voted for Hillary, and I'm quite a man.
Yes, you are, Alan. Yes, you are.
What's going on? I thought you said women didn't vote for Hillary.
No, men. I said men.
Oh, I see. All right.
Well, if you don't get men and women, you're going to be in some trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
You make a point. Well, that's great. Senate Democrats, joined by three Republicans, pushed through a measure intended to revive Obama-era internet rules that ensured equal treatment for all web traffic. Though opposition in the House at the White House seems insurmountable, Republicans on the short end of the 52-47 vote described the effort to reinstate net neutrality rules as political theater because the GOP-controlled House not expected to take up the issue. Nevertheless, this story getting some traction this morning. Anybody want to comment?
You know, one house rules are political theater. That's all they are. But political theater does have a purpose, and that, as they head into the midterms, will be important. People do care about this issue, about their internet, how much it costs, how fast it is, whether they can stream the shows they want to stream.
But that careful. But the question, Judy, is: are they concerned enough? I mean, you know, there's a sense that I keep hearing on the air, on public radio, other places, that people are getting really concerned about this. I think our listeners are, but I would have some real doubt about that.
Right. I don't think it's a decisive issue for them. I don't think it's not a pocketbook issue.
Nope.
Well, some Republicans say this is clearly a tempest in a teapot. John Thune of, I think, South Dakota said the internet thrived long before the Obama administration stepped in with rules in 2015. He predicted that when the FCC repeal is in place, consumers won't even know the difference.
That may be true. I mean, I guess we'll see, right?
Well, look, we pay entirely, the Shartocks pay entirely too much money for our cable system. It costs a fortune. And we do it. And you could argue that it may be true, but we keep paying. So when they change the rules in their own favor, people will keep on supporting them.
You're still going to pay.
Yeah, but the Churchills pay entirely too much for their internet service, and that's with net neutrality, right? So I don't know. I mean, is that really going to change either way or the other?
Well, Chris, it can certainly, you admit it can certainly get worse, can it?
It could, but one of the arguments that the people who oppose net neutrality make is that somebody who really just gets online to check their email a couple times a day shouldn't be paying the same amount as somebody who watches Netflix all day and sucks up a lot of data. So there are arguments to be made that the cost could come down for you know, people who don't use it as much.
Yes, the cost could come down for people who don't. And when that happens, will you be sure to send me a note?
All right, we're going to leave it on that snarky remark. That's the end of the panel for today. Thanks to Kaylin Brown and Judy Patrick and Chris Churchill and Alan Shartok, and to you for listening. A lot of roundtable ahead. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back.